Hi guys, welcome to another episode of Happy Being Well. We have, as usual, as always, a very exciting guest speaker to join us today. And the reason why I'm so excited to have this guest speaker on is because she actually specializes in trauma. And, you know, on this podcast, we do talk about how to identify our trauma and release them. So she actually specializes in trauma. So it's a real treat for you guys. And so I'm excited to dive deep with Rebecca Robinight. And she is a trained therapist who not only specializes in trauma, but also in addictions. And she's a yoga instructor, and she's working on getting her functional nutrition certification as well. Before we dive deep with Rebecca Robinight, this podcast is sponsored by happybeingwell.com, your online store for high style, high comfort, leggings, activewear, bras, 100% natural facial masks, natural soaps, natural candles, natural essential oils, aromatherapy diffusers, natural deodorants, and much more organic self-care products at happybeingwell.com and use code podcast25 for 25% off all leggings, free shipping in the USA. So Rebecca, so welcome to the Happy Being Well podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Rita.
Yeah, I'm really excited to really talk about trauma since you specialize in it. So talk to us about, you know, your journey. Like, how did you get to, first of all, like be who you are today? You're a therapist, yoga instructor. Now you're working on getting your functional nutrition certification. So how, like, why did you decide to jump on this, you know, health-centered mental health journey as a profession?
Oh my goodness. That's such a great question. I love that question. So I started in therapy when I was about 18 years old. And of course, I had childhood trauma. I think everybody did, just growing up in the military. I grew up in, my dad was a lieutenant colonel in the Army. And so we moved around a lot. And that can be traumatic for a child who really needs a schedule and whatnot. So started in 18. And then I started to recognize a lot of my therapists were also struggling. And they had their own behavioral health issues. They had unhealthy bodies. They were taking on a lot. They had a lot of clients as well. And then I became a therapist thinking I would give that back. And a lot of my cohorts were not well, working a lot of hours and whatnot. And just starting to see my clients weren't really benefiting after a while from traditional talk therapy. They needed that something more, but they weren't sure what it was. So I started to do body work. So I started with yoga, and not in the typical Western ideal of yoga where we'd have like the Instagram asana poses, you know, doing a perfect warrior or any of that, but rather going into the eight limbs of yoga. So doing breath work. So that goes alongside Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So Maslow, I don't know if you've ever heard of him before, but he has this like triangular picture, and there's like five needs that everybody needs to have. And so you basically have to master the first one before you get to the next one. And the very first one is our basic needs: food, air, shelter, clothing, right? And then the next one is safety. After that would be love and belonging, then our esteem needs, and then living our best life. And I would find that people would kind of get stuck in the safety area or their basic needs. They would start their trauma work with really unhealthy bodies. Like, just imagine what trauma does to us. And it didn't matter their body shape. So let's not get into like looking at that, but really unhealthy bodies, if we were to do blood work and look at their blood work, it would let them know that they were malnourished. And that malnourished could represent being malnourished in our basic needs. Remember, for that food, air, sense of safety, or even that love and belonging. So I would combine the asanas and the breath work, the pranayamas, with the yamas and the niyamas. It's just our basic way of living our lives. And then I found, okay, we need to go even further than that. And so I decided to incorporate nutrition. So a lot of the clients weren't doing their homework. You could send them worksheets left and right, and they were like, yeah, I'll do it. And then they get home and they weren't doing it. Or we would recommend doing yoga and they wouldn't do that either. So the one practice I saw that people do most days, I should say, because there are people who fast and whatnot, is that they would eat. And so I found that we could ground ourselves, especially with our trauma work, with food. And so that is why I brought that in. And it's really helped me. I've been different sizes throughout my life, but I found that when I started to do the nutrition, that it was connecting me to my higher power. It was connecting me to just life in general. My grandfather used to say, if you want to know about life, grow a garden. You'll see that some seeds make it, some don't. Some will produce, some don't. You have to break the ground and plant the seeds. And then you have to go through a bunch of shit, fertilizer, in order to bloom. And some of us will bloom on our own time, not when we're forced or whatnot. So that's how I got started.
I love that. And it's, and also too, like, it's so true. Like, and people, you know, deal with, like, they have trauma, whether they're aware of it or not, and they deal with stress and anxiety when they get triggered because of the trauma they're holding in their subconscious with food. Either they're, you know, overeating with comfort food to make them for self-soothing. And I can speak to that. Whenever I would get in the past, you know, stress and anxiety, especially when, you know, when I was like busy in my corporate days, I would just turn to the quick fix of like comfort food, going through the drive-through. It's quick, it's convenient, and it's a quick serotonin hit, dopamine hit with the comfort food. Or, you know, on the other hand, either some people, they turn it like bulimics or anorexics to kind of feel that sense of control to make themselves feel safe or whatever have you, right? It's all trauma related. So people deal with their traumas in these self-destructive ways. And so, and I think that we're coming to a point in our society, like collectively, you know, trauma is becoming such a huge trending buzz term now, that we're really recognizing we need to deal with this. And, you know, we all have trauma on some shape or form to certain degrees that we really do need to work on recognizing and releasing them. What are some of the like ways we can start recognizing traumas, especially like the minor ones that is not so, you know, that you really need to kind of go into like the subconscious to kind of reveal. I know, you know, through with me, like, I mean, I really had to, certain events would really force me to like recognize them. But I mean, it took like, sometimes it would take like, it took like years in order to kind of get to that point of recognition. Because there's so many little events and we get so busy too. So like in terms of like, you know, our to-do lists for the day, we can get so caught up in like life, you know, happening. So what are some of the ways that you would recommend somebody to start, you know, going with, like to start identifying their traumas?
So the nice thing about this is you don't have to force this awakening, right? It's just, you'll get this sense of call of like, something's not right here. The way that I'm living my life isn't in alignment with how I truly, really want to live my life. I've sort of kind of been people pleasing, which is a lot of, fawning is a trauma response. And people are like, you know what? I'm kind of sick of this. Like, I don't want to live my life like this anymore. But a lot of times people just get into autopilot and that's unfamiliar to them. So, excuse me. They just want to keep going, but that call will get louder and louder. It doesn't matter how much you try to push that down. It'll get louder and louder until you finally listen to it. And then just to know what resources are available. So a lot of times people are like, you know what, I'll just do self-care. I will just do, you know, certain things. But if this was an issue that you could do by yourself, you would have done that years ago. You know, so this is where we look at like breaking from that isolation or that introvert, you know, it's like, well, I don't want to share with anybody, you know, I don't want to be vulnerable because it's scary. Like if I get rejected or, you know, or to even hand over my power to a therapist, you know, and then they say something or try to tell me what to do. So it's just important to just recognize what resources are out there and to do supportive care or squad care. Like, start inviting some of your close friends and start doing things that are going to help you, whatever that looks like, whether that's yoga, whether it's going to get your hair done instead of doing it yourself, trying to cover up those roots, you know, it's really learning how to implement change. So I'm just going to give you an example just for a second to show you how the brain wants to stay the same. Mm-hmm. So I want you to cross your arms in a way that feels really comfortable for you, Rita. And let me know which arm is on top of which. Is it left over right or right over left?
So my left is over my my right hand or my right.
So that's just like, so let's just say this is our way of living life, left over right, left over right. And we're like, you know what? Left over right doesn't work for me anymore. It's my survival way of being. So now go right over left.
That still feels comfortable too. Wait a second. They both feel comfortable. Really,
well, that's good. So for some people, they can't do that. So like how you have to look down. I get a lot of clients who go all the way around and end up right back where they started with left over right. Or they go into right over left for those who are watching.
Does that mean I'm divergent?
You are ambidextrous, but also I think you would be more adapt to change and try new things. So when you have someone who really struggles to get that over into their right over left, and their brain is like, that feels weird, I want to go back, that's just folding their arms. So if they're struggling to do that, then they may struggle to do other things like reaching out for support. That's a brave act, especially with the four rules in a dysfunctional family are don't talk, don't trust, don't feel, and don't change. Mm-hmm. So they would never be able to go right over left. All their life would be left over right, left over right. So them looking out for other ways of just sharing their experiences is a brave, brave act for a lot of people. One of the things, if I can just go into, I work mainly with women. I do work with men as well, but mainly with women. And I help them to see like their stories that they create from their trauma. So it's our core beliefs. And there's different types of trauma. So we can have like an acute trauma where it's just one event, or we can have like complex traumas that are multiple traumas that have happened to us, whether they're big traumas or smaller traumas, or we can have chronic complex traumas. So this is where they've happened throughout our life. A lot of different things have happened. So I get a lot of people who are like, oh, if I told you my whole life story, you wouldn't believe it. And I'm like, I'll believe it. I would believe it. And then there's a thing called chronic re-traumatization. When we traumatize, and let's say that like this person grew up in poverty, and they might be traumatized or triggered, which is different. So we'll talk about a little bit of that a little bit later, but traumatized just by receiving a bill in the mail or an email, and they don't want to open those up, and those things pile up and pile up and they never open them. So that's a bit of like chronic re-traumatization, or being in a domestic violence relationship, because that relationship is over and that violence continues to happen, whether that's emotional or physical as well. So then there's generational trauma. I don't know if you've ever heard about that. So we have like, let's go back to, let's talk about the Holocaust. So we have Holocaust survivors or adult children of alcoholics. So you might not be an alcoholic, but your parents might have been alcoholics. And then you may have it skipped a generation and your kids are starting to experiment with alcohol and drugs. So that's a generational trauma. So I utilize food in order to help people recognize their trauma narratives. Like, do they feel like they're a victim? Do they feel like they're a survivor? Do they feel like they're thriving? How do you see yourself in this trauma? So we don't want to just look at the trauma, but the trauma narrative. Because sometimes trauma has happened before we have language. So you might have had little kiddos that were abused when they were in utero. Their parents may have been addicted to drugs and they were born addicted as well. That's trauma to the body. And they didn't have language then, right? So it's really frustrating when they get startled by something or triggered by something and their friends go, well, what's wrong? And they go, I have no idea. I feel like I'm on pins and needles. So, but I do use food, and we'll talk more about that and a little bit about how to ground with food.
Interesting. So yeah. And also there's like, for me, my trauma was, you know, I kept on recreating those narcissistic family dynamics in my relationships, you know, whether they be friendships or, you know, romantic partners, because, and I didn't really realize that until years later when, you know, I kind of was like, had an epiphany moment. I was like, oh, wait a second, this is, you know, the in-home environment. So it was, it's a familiarity, right? So the trauma can be just a familiarity. You're just familiar with that feeling. The nervous system is in it, and you unconsciously like recognize it as like home. So you gravitate towards those certain relationship dynamics because it's like a comfort zone, right? So in the nervous system, especially, is basically used to those feelings of anxiety that those relationships bring. And then you've adopted, like, for me, it was always like, oh, I'm a strong empath. And I was always like, oh, I can handle this. I can handle these relationship dynamics because I'm strong enough. And plus I was so empathic, I felt bad for, you know, these toxic people, because usually they did have, you know, a sad story or some kind of trauma that obviously they've faced. And so I would, you know, I guess the people pleasing would come out, and I would just, they had a really bad, you know, experiences, whatever, it's just they're being triggered and that's their way to feel whatever. I would just like understand it. And I would, the thing is, it wasn't healthy for me to always be the target, you know, when they were wanting to feel a sense of control and dominance to make themselves feel in control or safe. So I had to like, number one, recognize it, cut them all off. And that's when I really soared. And then I had to give myself those experiences of, you know, inner peace, self-love, in order to just repattern my nervous system. That's what I kind of did. So, you know, for people.
How did you end up doing that for yourself, Rita? When you broke that off and then you were going inside, because that's really the journey. So a lot of people think like, I hate New Year's Eve because a lot of people will have that slogan, new year, new you. And I'm like, your trauma journey isn't about becoming something new. It's reclaiming your natural self. It's really reclaiming who you are. My sister-in-law made a statement about my brother. She's like, he's just by his nature, a fixer. And I go, no, not by his nature, by his programming. By his nature, he's actually, you know, attuned and interaligned. He doesn't worry about everybody else. He doesn't feel that over responsibility to care for others, but alongside others, knowing that they have the fortitude to take care of themselves. So by nature, we are interaligned. We have that fortitude. By programming, we are fixers. So what was that like for you? Like, what did you do to get yourself that inner healing? Because it's so unfamiliar. It seems almost like learning new language where it's like, okay, I'm affirming myself right now. And then we're like, okay, I'm done. So how did you do it?
The thing is, well, even when I was putting up with the toxic relationship, I was always meditating. I always was able to kind of bring myself moments of inner peace through, I love meditation, you know, spending time in nature. I'm an introvert by nature, so I need to have those alone moments that produce peace and stuff. But at the same time, I was simultaneously in the past entertaining these toxic relationships because that was what I was used to, because those were the relationship dynamics that I grew up in. So it, for me, I was really just, most of it was recognizing the dynamic, how I was tolerating these relationships, and also recognizing the consequences in my life in terms of taking away my energy. Then after talking to, being around these people, then all of a sudden, you know, we can start talking, like we're basically, we have a lot of similarities to monkeys, right? We unconsciously start adapting the sayings that we constantly hear other people say, the moods that you're being exposed to through others. So I was recognizing how that was rubbing off on me as well, and how that's affecting, you know, how I'm showing up in life. So a lot of it was recognition, and then just really, you know, recognizing, you know, the value of being around other healthy minded people, and recognizing that I don't need to be, it's a part of it, because you're just so used to being stimulated by the drama they provide, right? And so when you're growing up in those in that particular relationship dynamic, you know, I was coming up with strategies to deal with that in my family dynamic, right? Because I was still thriving in terms of getting good grades in school, going to school every day, and volunteering. So I would always focus on achievement while growing up in that family dynamic of that, and took it as a challenge, like, oh, I can, you know, I could still thrive, and regardless of this toxic energy that I'm kind of like coexisting in. So a lot of it was recognition. I wasn't even able to consciously, wasn't even aware that was taking place throughout, you know, most of my life. And then shifting it to appreciating, like, no, I don't, you know, just being around other healthy minded who share the same values and belief as me. So yeah. And then also to my meditation practice, my self-care practice strengthened as a result of cutting them off.
So for a lot of people, they didn't always hear that awareness piece of it. They'll get it in like from their friends. So people who were raised in trauma have a high tolerance for pain. And their friends might say something like, Rita, I don't know how you're doing it. And so that's letting us know that we're outside of normal stress, that we're overstressed or in our trauma state, our high anxiety state. But when we respond with, I'm used to it, lets people know that you're still on autopilot of thinking that's what you deserve. Like, you don't deserve that. When they're saying, I don't know how you're doing it, that is a huge red flag that we've gone from normal stress to overstress. And that our bodies, our minds, like, we don't deserve to carry that much baggage or weight. So I always do like a stress test with my clients, and they can always go on to, it's the Ra Holmes stress scale, and it'll just say what's like, what has been going on in your life for the past year. And you just read the list of like, has any of these things happened the last 12 months? And you check mark them. And then there's a value that goes with that. Like say you got married, or you had a kid, or someone died, or you got divorced. Each one of those things has a value to it. And at the end, you add that value up. And if it's 150, or less, you have a 30% chance of it's a probability. This is all like, you know, guessing, because they're not looking at like your coping skills. They're not looking at like your support systems. They're just looking at just the stress event. But if you have 150 or less in points, you have a 30% chance of developing an illness within the next 2 years. If it's 150 to 299, it goes up to 50%. And most of my clients have over 300 points. They're in the 400 range, actually. And that gives them an 80% chance of developing some sort of serious illness. So it's literally that dis-ease within us, that stress, that dis-ease, turns into disease, a literal disease. And so most of our chronic illnesses are related to chronic stress. And that's what post-traumatic stress disorder, I would like to take that post off and say a lot of us are living in present stress traumatic disorder and not post, because the past is affecting our present, it's affecting our coping skills, and we're not recognizing, we're not. But when our friends are saying things like that, those are a little bit of the wake-up calls. When we start to feel that discomfort, that disease, we're not able to sleep, our appetite has changed, we're either eating more or less. And this is beyond like disordered eating, a clinical aspect of it. This is dysregulated eating, because when we're in stress, our body goes, oh no, we're in danger. And so our stomach will tighten up because it's like, we can't, we don't have the energy right now to digest like a Thanksgiving dinner. So we're just going to shut down unimportant systems. And that way we can send the blood to our limbs to get us out of danger, whether that's fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And so this is why I bring in the food, because once you like take a sip, just even a sip of water, if you do this in a high stress, our body goes, wait, why are you bringing in food? Why aren't you like, why are you bringing in sustenance? Shouldn't we be running? Aren't we in danger? And then we're going, no, we're actually safe. This is part of your grounding. And so for a lot of people, we stay busy in our trauma, right? So a lot of people are super, super busy. So for them to meditate, because I get clients who are like, I can't sit still, I cannot meditate. So we do what's called moving meditation. So I'll have them walk or whatever. This is like someone who's like, I need to have a serious conversation with my husband, but he won't sit still. That's because he's scared. So you got to walk. You got to go for a walk with them or for a drive where he can do something. So he's not feeling like I have to look into her eyes or his eyes. I can like be able to move. There's another technique that we use, the 5-4-3-2-1, to help ground people. So what's five things you see? What's four things you hear? That. But if you're still stuck in that busy or flight, people are like, I don't want to sit down. So I'll go, okay, let's meal prep. So I'll go get a recipe out. And then what are five ingredients? What, you know, and then listen to the chopping of that vegetable or the unwrapping of that cheese or whatever it is that they're unpackaging, you know, and then really like smell those things, taste those things, you know, and that helps them to ground. A lot of us had unavailable parents when we were growing up because they were going through their own traumas, right? So they were like unhealed people having kiddos and they were just stuck in their own heads. How many times have we like spaced out and weren't there? And our partner goes, hey, are you there? Oh, so our kids were doing that too as we were trying to raise them, and or as the same as our parents, we were doing that to them, like, mom, dad, you know, are you there? And so we internalized a lot of that when they weren't there, that it must have been our fault somehow. In Judeo-Christian, so it talks a lot about a father, but not a mother. And this is where the trauma narrative comes in. So where does a woman turn to if her mother is unavailable? So a lot of them, if their father's unavailable, they're like, oh, I'll just turn to my higher power, or in Judeo-Christian or any religion that seems to be male dominated. But for women who are struggling with their mother, they're like, where do I go? There's no archetype for a strong woman. And so they end up looking to other women or whatever. And a lot of them come in to my therapy practice and they'll say, I don't trust women. I don't like women. I'm better friends with men. And so they deny part of their own femininity, their own divine nature. So turning towards Mother Earth helps to ground them. So we can get into those aspects. When they go into Judeo-Christian and they look at like Eve, you know, it was almost like she was an afterthought. Like, God created the world and the animals and man, and oh yeah, then that woman came along, and she was just there to please him. And then she had this fault. It was all her fault that everybody fell from perfection. And it's actually in, I brought this book, A Deeper Wisdom by Patricia Riley. She has the 12 steps from a woman's perspective. She talks about that moment and she says, you know, what if it wasn't like written like that? What if it was written differently? And instead of Eve being the one responsible for the fall, she was more like, you know, I'm willing to leave my comfort zone. I'm willing to leave my comfort zone and I'm willing to bite into the wisdom of my life. And the snake representing like the shedding of that skin. Right. And so it wasn't a shame thing, because in Judeo-Christian, they talk about this being like, that was the way it was supposed to happen, so the rest of us could come to the earth or whatever. But for me, it's removing the shame, because a lot of women, especially those in a religious background, struggle with eating. They have so much shame around food, whether they're eating too much or too little. And then if you're in a fear state and the body is shut down to get you out of trouble, then you kind of struggle with like knowing when you're full and knowing when you're hungry, because we disassociated in that trauma when something was so overwhelming for our feelings. And we were like, I don't want to feel this fear. I don't want to feel this frustration. I don't want to feel this anger. We shut that down, but we shut down every other feeling as well, the hunger feeling. And when we can get in touch, this is embodiment. If we can just get in touch with food, because maybe that might be safer than the fear, right? Than the frustration, than that initial anger. If we can get in touch with our hunger and become embodied through that way, by grounding in those small ways, by eating different things, and seeing what nourishes us, not just because, like, if you're doing the calories, like counting calories, 100 calories of chips is not the same as 100 calories of broccoli. It just doesn't do the same in our bodies, right? So we want to count nutrients. And this is the same with, like, so I get a lot of people who say, I don't want to go on a diet because I don't want to restrict myself. I want to eat whatever I want. This goes back to the narcissistic relationship. We don't want anybody telling us what to do when it comes to our recovery, when to eat, when not to eat. That sounds like a parent, right? Like, nobody asked us, what do you want to eat? Well, you're going to eat this, whether you like it or not, or you're not going to eat at all, you know? And then you have to eat so many bites or whatever. So we don't really want to turn our power over to a diet. We want to assume that empowerment ourselves and that attunement, right? Intuitive eating. What do I want to eat? A lot of us stand in front of the pantry, we open and close that sucker so many times, and we don't know what we're looking for. This is going to be to help us, bring us in. What are you looking for? Well, I just ate. I couldn't possibly be hungry. You might not be physically hungry. Are you emotionally hungry? What are you hungry for? And sometimes our cravings will direct us. If we can really listen, I'm really craving pizza. Ooh, why pizza? I want that cheesy pizza. And cheese comes from cows, only from pregnant cows, right? Or cows that have just recently given birth. So we're looking for that mother's nurturing through cheese or ice cream or something of that nature. So, or like, say we're like, oh, I'm craving chips. I'm craving something salty. Well, salt is our body's way of saying, I'm trying to balance the cortisol levels. And cortisol is released when we're super stressed. So we're trying to balance that out. Or if I want chips, I want that crunchy. I'm angry and I can't tell anybody that, because girls are raised with sugar and spice and everything nice. So pinkies out when we're super angry, right? And super sarcastic. So I go back to, what do you want? You want to eat whatever it is that you want. That want is going to change. It's just like our relationships. When we meet someone, we're like, ooh, I want him or her, and we think they're really hot, and we go after that physical aspect, and we find out, oh my gosh, they're not all together, or they're really mean. And so I'm like, we do the same thing with our food. A lot of people go, oh, I know I'm going to pay for this later, but they eat it anyways. I go, do you really want to pay for that later? And they're like, not really, I just want to enjoy that. And I go, so this is how we balance our life of what we're really looking for, that awareness piece, right? That you were saying, what do I deserve? Just if I'm going to eat this, do I deserve to have an upset stomach, acid reflux, diarrhea, constipation? You know, am I emotionally constipated? Am I having things run through me like the diarrhea and I'm just explosive all the time? You know, it's learning what your body is saying through that food and helping you ground. So I know I kind of gave you a lot, but going back one more time, I want to eat whatever I want is going to change when you figure out what you deserve. And so you can have whatever you want. It's just like breaking up with that nasty ex person, that ex partner, dating the person of your dreams, and then going, I think I'm going to go back to my ex. Eventually we're going to go, no, I don't. I don't ever want that. And it's going to be the same with our food. We're going to find that balance. And it's all through this. It all works together to show us what we deserve, how to have a healthy life, how we talk to ourselves, right? Like, I'm going to eat it anyways, even though I know it's bad for me. I'm going to call myself names afterwards saying I'm so fat or I'm too skinny or whatever it is. We're going to learn, like, this really hearing yourself through the food dynamic is going to help you heal your traumas.
I absolutely love that. And I love the fact that you're incorporating, you know, the food component, like, you know, if you're craving pizza, well, is it the cheese? And the cheese is coming from pregnant cows and therefore relating it to you wanting that nurturing. And then et cetera, I like that. And then asking yourself, like, do you deserve the consequences of, you know, overeating or overindulging in that particular comfort food? I love that. I always say to people too, like, not so much like more so like when, you know, a lot of people are talking about, you know, jealousy or like when they go and they scroll on their social media and then they start getting jealous, which I really feel like, you know, it's such a negative. It causes so much self-harm when you dwell in the thought and energy of jealousy, because what is that telling, what is that telling your subconscious that, why are you feeling that way? Do you feel like you're not going to be able to achieve that? Therefore you have these negative feelings, like, you know, what is the message you're sending to yourself? So I love the fact that you're doing that, carrying it over to, you know, also what we choose to eat or what we choose to, you know, do and how that, you know, relates to the consequences, the after consequences of that particular choice or decision, but also recognizing why you are making that choice and decision, like, what is the lack there? And then, you know, being more aware of the message you're sending to yourself, because it's basically, we're just basically reinforcing that lack, reinforcing that trauma by doing the action that's bad for us. We're just,
all of us want to be at our best, right? We want to perform at our best. So the thing is that when we're exposed to trauma, we learn how to survive things. And so in a weird way, we are always looking for that next shoe to drop, because we're like, oh, it's too quiet. I know something bad's going to happen. It's almost as if we're anticipating it or hoping for it so that we can do what we do best, and that's protect ourselves from danger, right? So you'll see people when they are trying to nod off and they just jerk themselves awake because their body is like, hey, we can't be sleeping. We can't rest. We'll rest when we're dead, you know? So it's like they're always hypervigilant. And they don't know how to rest. And when they have peace, they don't know how to manage it. So it's not that people actually want drama. It's that they want the relief of the anticipation of something bad, right? So when they create it, it's like, okay, good. Now I can rest because I know I get a time period before it starts up again, before that cycle starts up again. So they're just trying to cope and relieve that anticipation and the anxiety, and then they create it, and then they can rest for a time period, and then they anticipate again, and then it erupts, and then the rest, and it's just a cycle. It's when they get around other people that are healthy, they start to see the contrast, like, hey, you're not like sitting with you're not sitting facing the door. You can actually have your back to the door. You're not jumping when you hear a door slam. You're not like when someone's yelling at you, you're able to stay calm. How are you doing that? You know, so then they start to see, I want that. Mm-hmm. And they start to go for, and they start to notice, like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want to feel this way anymore. I want to feel this. I want that. I actually do want that peace. And then they start to learn coping skills because nobody ever gave them that. You know, they had a feelings keeper, so they never were able to fully express themselves. Like, I have people who will even laugh covering their mouth because they were told, are you laughing? You think that's funny? And they were like, oh, it wasn't funny. And so it was really scary for them to be emotive, you know? So for them to start expressing is really important in trauma healing. And a good way to do that is with food, because sometimes, you know, food is outside of just like food is fuel. We're complex people. So is our food. If our relationship is only one thing, it's very rigid. We're not open to other ways of expression. Like, food, you can bite into it and go, so good. Or a lemon and go, oh my God, it's so sour. Or it's too hot, it's spicy. You know, it teaches us how to be emotive almost, especially if we've been emotionally disassociated or suppressed or dead inside. You know, it really, like, food can start to aliven us, can awaken our taste buds, and we can start to really experience things. This is why mindful eating is important.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that. And I love that you mentioned the piece about when you're around other like really calm people and you're, you know, starting this awareness journey, you know, healing journey, you start to really pay attention to that. You start to see the contrast and also too, you're going to see, you're going to see like other people, you're going to pay attention to more calm people and you're just going to recognize, you know, how living in a state of calmness, you're just showing up better, you know, like you have clarity, you have more awareness, you have more energy, you know, you're tapping into your purpose more, you know your purpose, you know, you just, it brings so many gifts. And when you are living in a place of calmness, but you have to get used to that calmness. And, you know, for me too, I love the point, you know, when you bring up, are you new net nurturing, like positive self-talk, because I'll do positive self-talk. I text myself. I love journaling, but I I'm running a business, right? So I'm very, very busy. So I do, it's really quick. And we're so acclimated to texting, right? We text other people. I just text myself, send myself notes, or, you know, texting God, right? So, because I incorporate that because we're just, it's a thing that we're just so used to doing throughout the day. So why not just text yourself, right? And that's what I do. And meditating is great, journaling, self-care, you know, I love self, you know, even when you're just as a girl putting on a facial mask or whatever it is too, that's really calming, it calms your nervous system down, you know, when you're applying something that's soothing to the skin. And affirmations are really powerful. There's a lot of things, you know, you can do, but it's all around trying to incorporate it in your schedule, making it a habit as well, and dedicating to it, you know.
I think that's hard for people because they're like, that's so unfamiliar. They're so used to their routine, their habit. Because that the way that they try to survive that trauma became like, okay, well, I'm just going to do this to get through the day. And then it was the week and then several weeks and months and years till it became their way of being. So to incorporate something small, create something new, and doing it in little ways. So I have like people who are like, I just need to get more sleep. What time do you go to bed? They're like 1-2 in the morning. Well, it's going to be hard to go to bed at 8-9 o'clock in the evening if you're used to going to bed at 1 or 2. So you just start titrating that back by 15 minutes, you know, so 1:45 to 1:30 to, you know, till you finally get to where it is that you want to be. So one affirmation, and you just repeat that. Maybe you have like a mantra Monday, and you just repeat that one thing over and over and over again throughout your day. And maybe it starts addressing the negative. So like Louise Hay has one that says, I release the pattern in my mind that creates resistance to my good. So she acknowledges what's going on instead of like unicorns and rainbows, you know. She'll say, I release the pattern in my mind that creates resistance to my good. I deserve to feel good. And you just keep repeating that part over and over again. So when you find yourself getting caught up in negative loops and ruminating on that, you can use that mantra to pull yourself and just recognize. Or some people will say, oh, I'm rehearsing unhappiness. I'm rehearsing my unhappiness. And they will then switch it to, I deserve to feel good. I deserve to feel good. Because people want to change the past through those looping stories instead of learning how to accept, how to integrate, and how to empower. So because they don't want to accept. I don't want to accept that. I feel like I gave something away or whatever. And so this part is radical acceptance. It's over. It's okay. I can let my mind rest and I deserve to feel good. The food is another thing. So you're not incorporating something new. It's already something that you do. You can only go 3 days, you know, without water and 3 weeks without food. So, you know, eventually you're going to have to eat. And it's that way of like, what am I choosing right now? My abusers aren't around right now. Am I choosing to pick up where they left off and hurt myself? Or am I going to nurture myself? And so it lets you see where you're at in your own recovery process, just through awareness. You don't even have to change the way that you're eating yet, just noticing what am I doing. And then like start asking yourself, what is my relationship with food? Am I paying attention to what it's trying to tell me? If it's too hot or my stomach doesn't agree with it or whatever, are we eating in front of the TV instead or on social media instead of being mindful? Are we rushing it? You know, are we eating through paper bags and things that we're going to throw away? Are we eating on trash, future trash? Or are we eating on plates or fine china or whatever it is? Are we treating ourselves or are we just trashing ourselves? So it's just making that awareness and those connections so we can start progressing. You know, and you don't have to do this all the time. You might just be like, for the first 3 or 4 bites, so remember, to sit sometimes is very difficult for people, especially to do mindful eating, that embodiment. So just do 3 or 4 bites where I'm not going to look at the social media. I'm not going to look at my phone. I'm not going to eat in front of my computer. I'm going to sit right here. I'm going to take 3 or 4 bites, and then I'll move to the TV, and then I'll look at my phone or whatever it is, just so they can, you know, move towards having a full meal, at least one time a day, where they are centered, grounded, and mindful.
I love that. That's awesome. I'm just curious, what are your thoughts around, you know, people that there's a certain particular technique where people go and they go back into the original event or whatever event it was that caused the trauma, and they basically change, you know, while in a theta state, they change the scenario to be a positive scenario, right? So they're trying to basically re-alter the memory, therefore to repattern that, you know, to associate into better feelings around this re-altered memory. What do you think that's an effective technique? Do you
whatever's going to make people feel better, you know, I'm like, go for it. Go for whatever is going to work for you, because we're all individuals, and what might work for you, Rita, might not work for me, and vice versa. And so that's why I'm like, get curious about your healing, you know, and don't ever think, not ever think that because this didn't work for you, that it's not, that you're just not capable of recovery. It's not true. They have so many different modalities out there. Just try anything and everything that will work for you, because you deserve healing. You deserve healing. My modality is with, you know, combining Eastern and Western philosophies, really grounding through food, because I do believe that's one thing that we use almost daily. I know some people fast, like I said before, or don't eat through their dysregulated eating. But I feel like instead of just doing a worksheet, it's really a hands-on practice to open up all of our senses, because we disassociate in trauma. And so we need to get back into that embodiment. So if they are, I don't know if it's remembering or just recreating the narrative so that they're empowered and not victimized. And so whatever you got to do for you.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Love that response. So true. We're all different. We're all complex. So whatever technique modality works best with you, whatever you resonate with best. I love that. So it's true. Great. So where can people find more information about you, contact you? Where can they go?
So I'm not taking one-on-one clients right now, but I do have a free guide to cravings, or to your healing journey through cravings. So if they want to contact me, they can look me up on Instagram or Clubhouse, and they can back channel me on Instagram. It's _wonderlust_vegan. And then on Clubhouse, it's just Rebecca Robinette. You can find me on there and back channel me, and I'll send you that information. You just gotta give me your email and I'll send that out to you. I do have programs and workshops and retreats that I do that are upcoming. So if you would like to get on that list, you can let me know. But I do not take on one-on-one clients at this time.
Okay, cool. So do you have like a website people can go to if they
want? Not yet. I had one and it's down because I need to get like the programs up. I'm not an IT person, but there was something that wasn't supporting the portal. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to have someone else work on that.
Cool. Cool. Do you have like a link tree on your Instagram where people can like click on a link tree, get your retreats information, all that jazz?
I didn't hear that last part.
Do you have like a link tree that they can click
on?
Okay. Okay. So it's literally, okay, go ahead. So everybody that's listening on audio, I will have her links posted in the show notes. You can either, you know, depending upon what podcast platform you're listening on, you can either copy and paste it and put it in your browser, or you can click on it if it's clickable, and go and contact Rebecca on her Instagram page. And for those of you who are on Clubhouse, her Clubhouse handle, would it be Rebecca Robinette? Could they find you just by punching in your name?
And it's Robinette.
Cool. Awesome. So I really enjoyed, honestly, like you're a wealth of information, amazing, amazing strategies and techniques to really get people to start that journey of like identifying and releasing trauma, healing, most importantly, and just amazing insights. I really loved everything you had to say. Very powerful. So thank you so much, Rebecca, for sharing, you know, so much. Really, really grateful. And I highly recommend, guys, that you guys check out Rebecca on Instagram or follow her on Clubhouse if you're on Clubhouse. I know most people are on Instagram, so check her out. And guys, remember to be happy being well. Drink more water, add some lemon, and see you on the next episode. And if you're not subscribed, subscribe so you don't miss another episode. And have a wonderful, wonderful day or evening.